Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
KYW Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
They put all that hard work and energy in, and in basketball especially, it's such a long season. Every team goes in the beginning of the year saying, we want to win a conference championship. We want to go to the NCAA tournament. So when you have teams that put in the work and effort to get there and to see how excited they are for each other, that's the part as a coach that is really rewarding.
And our guest this week is Cabrini University women's basketball coach Kate Pearson. Spent more than a decade leading the Cavaliers, one of the top programs in the Division III in the region. Coach, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much, Matt, for having me. This is a great podcast, and I'm honored to be a part of it.
Thank you very much. This is, as we're talking here, it is mid-February, the grind. How are you feeling about things here?
We're feeling pretty good. It's exactly kind of what you said. We have a unlikely bye this coming weekend, and I think when you looked at the calendar early on, you know, we're not used to having a bye this late in the season off on a Saturday, but I think it's probably kind of a good thing for the girls to have a little bit of a break as we move into the last two games of regular season and hopefully make a playoff run.
So basketball has obviously been a big part of your life. What's your first basketball memory growing up?
I think, you know, as growing up, we were always around athletics. My mom was actually a soccer coach first while I was growing up. So my early memories with sports probably relate more around soccer. But I think it was around fourth grade where I got involved in what they had, Springfield AA, where everybody can kind of come in and put you on different teams, like a rec league. And I remember vividly walking into the gym that day and having the opportunity to kind of play in a game setting for the first time that way.
So what was that like, the first time you in a game setting?
I think it was just, you know, it was fun. It was from the first time that I stepped on there, I had fun. I always enjoyed competing, the thrill of athletics, and also just, you know, the endorphins you get from running around that way. So the first experience that I can remember is fun, and I think that's kind of what's kept me in it.
So soccer, basketball, you also lacrosse, were any of you, or was it just you went from one season to the next, whatever was happening?
Yeah, growing up, I think we played, you know, anything and everything. So I played softball in the early years growing up, but then as I got older and got into high school, I really liked the pace of lacrosse a little bit better. But, you know, in the neighborhood growing up, we had street hockey out front with my brothers and kids. We had, like, home run derby. We had water polo that we played and made up in our own down the street at one of the pool. So, you know, we just tried to kind of get involved in whatever sport possible.
When do you start realizing that you're a little better than a lot of the people you're playing with, that maybe you're starting to get picked earlier for teams and getting a little more attention?
I think I just was always really competitive and wanted to be that kid, wanted to be the one that was a part of that. So nothing really strikes out as to this like defining moment. I actually think I might have been even like a little bit of like a late bloomer, and it was around high school where I kind of started to have more of that passion for, especially with basketball. And I think that I, because I was playing multiple sports, that allowed kind of that boom to come a little bit later on.
What drew you to basketball? I mean, other than everybody's playing it and all, but obviously there was something that really kind of pulled you in about
that
sport.
Yeah, it was, I think it was around the time that I was in eighth grade, I actually started coming down to Drexel University to the basketball camps, and it was when Coach Herrian was here, and he had a great program, and he ran a co-ed basketball camp. So I came down, you know, kid from the suburbs coming down to Philly and playing with a lot of the Philly kids, and the fact that it was only a handful of girls that were playing against a lot of boys. And I think that's where, that was kind of in the middle school years up through high school that I came down here. I think that's where my love started to go, because we would come down and watch the Drexel, and that was when Malik Rose was here, and that was just a lot of fun. I think my passion for the game grew from that.
Now, you played at Springfield?
Yes.
And then you play University of Scranton.
Mm-hmm.
What's the path from Springfield to Scranton, and were there any other possibilities that you look back you could have taken as far as college goes?
Yeah, I was, you know, in through the recruiting process, I was looking at all three levels. So I was, you know, looking at some smaller D1 schools. I was looking at Westchester in the area. Actually, Chris Day was my AU coach. He is now an assistant coach at LaSalle. He's been at Penn. He's been at, you know, around. And he was the coach at Widener at the time. And we joke that we still, that he was a little upset with me when I did not choose to go to Widener and ended up at Scranton. So as I was going through, I was looking for programs that were strong programs competing nationally where I'd have an opportunity to play. And a couple of times I went up to Scranton and just kind of fell in love with the school and the program that was there. So when it came down to it, it just felt like the right place to be.
Now, you also played lacrosse at college. Was the idea always you were going to play two sports, or was it something that it just fit at Scranton?
I think as I was going through it, I actually had some opportunities with lacrosse as well, but I knew, again, when you go back to where my passion was basketball. I knew I couldn't give up basketball to play lacrosse in college. So lacrosse ended up just being a bonus, and that's one of the things that Division III, other levels, there are some athletes who do it, but I think Division III, you know, embraces it the best with allowing you to play more than one sport. And when I got up there, actually, I think it was only year two of the program for the women's side for Scranton. So it was a fresh new program. So that was something, you know, you had this juxtaposed with Scranton tradition basketball program, had won a national championship and always a team that's up there. And then a new budding program that, you know, was kind of evolving that way. So to have both experiences was really cool.
Could you feel the different dynamics of an established power and a program building from the ground up, even as a college kid? Did you feel a difference?
I think, you know, when I look back now and I think about with basketball, it was like there was an expectation when we walked on the court that we were to win. And I think when you walked on the lacrosse field, that there was a little bit more of, I don't want to say happy to be here, because they did want to, you know, grow and get better. But there was still that kind of building. There was definitely a little bit of a different feel. And I also think that allowed me to have some success with the lacrosse part of it, because most of my focus was on basketball. And then lacrosse was just kind of a bonus. And I would roll into it a lot less pressure, just kind of go out and play. And that kind of gave me two different feelings and experiences.
How was the juggling act of two sports? Because I'm sure, I mean, it's not that long ago, but the intensity of a season maybe wasn't as much of 12 months like it is now. So what was the juggling act like?
I think it really wasn't that hard. I think actually basketball is so heavy in the fall into the winter. And then when you get through, it is a long season. When you get to March, you know, I think I needed the lacrosse as that distraction, because, you know, I didn't want the basketball season to end. So it was a good way to kind of roll into it. And I think as an athlete, the more I had with academics and athletics to have to balance, the better I was at staying focused and staying steady with both.
So you ran the point at Scranton?
I did.
Looking at their record book, your three-point attempts, assists, you're all over the place. How would you describe your style as a basketball player?
Well, I'm sure, too, even though I was a point guard, and I've had some point guards that I've coached that I've kind of had to explain, I was a scoring point guard, so I did look to shoot. But, you know, I tried to, as a player, just see the court, know what, you know, and one of the things as a coach that we talk to our players about is trying to put your teammates in the best position possible. So play to their strengths. So, you know, you don't necessarily want to push the ball up the floor and throw it to, you know, a post player who's running the middle of the floor. We want to make sure we're kind of pushing it and getting them in the right scenario. So, you know, I was looking to run our offense, know where to put people in the right spot, but I wasn't afraid to take the shot when it was there.
How was the transition to college? Was it at first a big whoa, this is a lot different, or was it pretty much, okay, I'm feeling pretty good?
You know what, when I first got there, zero problems. I was excited to be a little bit away from home. I was excited to get right into pickup and preseason and working out and doing all that stuff, but I think my preseason was so strong that then I hit a little bit of a bump once we got into the actual like practices. And, you know, when I reflect back on our freshman year, it was a roller coaster. And Coach Strong, who is one of the best coaches, you know, that I've ever had and also that is well known across women's basketball, he'll tell you that we had a little bit of a rough year freshman year. He had come off losing in the Final Four repeated years back-to-back, lost Kelly Halpin, who's from the area, who was a tremendous player. So there was a lot of pressure on our freshman class to come in and kind of step right into those shoes. And as a freshman, that is hard sometimes to do it. And so, you know, I was in and out of the starting lineup and going back and forth. And luckily, at the end of the season, we kind of sat down, talked about things, and were able to kind of move forward and create some more success after that.
And you had a lot of success you didn't just play both sports. You were high level, you know, All-American, all-conference stuff. What are some of the memories when you look back at your entire athletic career at Scranton that come flooding back when you think back to it?
You know, I think it's the daily, every day getting to practice, getting an opportunity to play, which is what we try to preach to our players now. You know, the NCAA runs for basketball are great. We went to the Elite Eight my senior year and were like, you know, shy of going to the Final Four. And then for the lacrosse side of it, we actually won the first ever, we won two conference championships of the first ever conference championship. And then my senior year, we won the first NCAA tournament game for that. So being a part of the first for that side of it was a really cool part.
When does coaching start to creep in? Is that something that you always kind of figure whenever I'm done playing, or are you done playing and you're like, what now? I need to stay close to the sport.
I think it was a little bit of both. So growing up, and especially, like I said, my mom was a coach, so on the sidelines a lot with that, seeing it in the summers. I always worked camps as a counselor, so then I was around different coaches in this area doing that. So I think I knew it was part of my path, but to be honest, when I graduated, I was not ready to be done playing. So I was kind of back and forth about what I wanted to do and trying to decide if I wanted to try and pursue anything overseas or anything along those lines. And then I got a phone call from Bobby Morgan that she was taking over at Cabrini. And my mom, when she told me Bobby called, I didn't believe her because Bobby was the Haverford High School coach who was our rival when I was at Springfield. So to me, Haverford High School was Bobby Morgan. Like,
right.
They're one and the same. So when she was taking over at Cabrini and was looking for somebody kind of fresh out of college, played Division III, that could help, you know, kind of navigate that part of it because that was new territory for her, she gave me a call. And so it kind of happened that way. It's kind of one of those things that life happens to you sometimes.
And you mentioned your mom coached soccer. She coached soccer at Cabrini.
She started it. She actually, with Zeke, was the first coach for the women's program there. So, yeah, so Cabrini actually is in my blood, because then if you even go back even more, Mother Ursula, who was the founder of Cabrini, was actually the principal for my grandmother at Mother Cabrini High School in New York.
Wow.
And then comes down, my two uncles went there, played soccer, then my mom plays there. So it was kind of one of those, like, meant to be.
First of all, how comfortable are you coaching at first? Is it a difficult transition to go from playing to coaching right away?
Yeah, I actually really struggled with it. And actually, my first year, I didn't have to struggle with it too much because we were in a scenario, we were picking people off of different teams to fill a roster. So I got to practice almost every day because we needed bodies. So the first year, it was great because I kind of got to do a little bit of both. I think it was probably about year three, we were going into playoffs. And like, I think that's when I was going to bed thinking more on like about what's going to happen tomorrow with the game, looking at it that way. And that's when I felt like I finally transitioned a little bit more into that coach mode. But those first couple of years are hard because you want to hold on to being able to play as much as possible.
So mention your mom coached at Cabrini. How much did the familiarity with Cabrini help you when you get started coaching?
I think it was really helpful because I think especially for Bobby at the time, she was looking for ways with, you know, navigating through the recruiting process part of it. She knows the X and O's, you know, best than anybody I know on the coaching side of it. So it was more on the Division III model, playing at that level, and then Cabrini. So the fact that I kind of grew up on that campus, and my mom and I have a great relationship, but when I was looking at schools, part of the reason I never really looked at Cabrini because I wanted a little bit of a separation that way. But I knew it was a great place for people to come have a great overall experience athletically and academically.
Division III is a little different. How much did and does the fact that you went through Division III as an athlete help you when you're coaching?
It helps a lot because you know as you're going through, you're looking for players that have the same passion for the sport. You know, at Division I, a lot of times you'll find players who are passionate about it, but they're also very good at it. And then the incentive with, you know, scholarship and all the perks around it can keep them at a program. At Division III, you know, you're trying to make sure that the players understand the balance of both. You want to find players that love the game enough, but then also know that as a coach, I'm going to give them opportunities to, you know, pursue other opportunities, including we have a number of kids who come to Cabrini as dual sport athletes. And that's also a credit to coaches like Jackie Nearing, Ken Prothro, whom women's lacrosse and men women's soccer are actually two their sports that we seem to share athletes a lot. So our relationships there are important for it.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Cabrini women's basketball coach Kate Pearson right after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
It's the smart look at the issues catching fire in Philadelphia. Flashpoint.
What we have is a crisis.
This goes way beyond just the perpetrator.
You know how many times I had stopped people in front of my house from shooting up?
It was a moment where black and brown people on the margins got to say, no, we've been hurting.
I think we forget that you came from somewhere else too.
Host Jerry Gregg walks you through the flames. On air Saturday evenings at 9:30 and Sunday mornings at 8:30. Or search the Flashpoint podcast on the radio.com app.
And we are back on One-on-One. Our guest this week, Cabrini University women's basketball coach Kate Pearson.
So you spend 4 years with Bobby.
Yes.
Bobby leaves, go to Haverford. Bernadette Lakaitis comes in. You stay on staff. What is it like, that transition? Because the success level stays very high.
Yeah. So Bobby had done, you know, such a good job with the recruiting process that we had when Bernadette came in. We had, I think, 8 seniors on the team that year, so that were part of that first recruiting class and a part of kind of the build up, and then the junior class was really strong too. So at the time I was teaching, you know, as a part-time assistant, you have to fill your way. So I was teaching at St. Catherine of Siena, which was right down the road from Cabrini, and I was finishing actually my master's in cert in education at Cabrini. So that was one of the reasons I decided to kind of stay on with Bernadette and go there. And, you know, it was a great experience for me, and to be able to work under, like I said, where Bobby is just, she's still one of my mentors and is so knowledgeable of the game. And then to see Bernadette come in, and she just brought such great energy and excitement to, that's her personality no matter what. But especially, I think, for a new job, she knew she had to come in and kind of sell the girls on that part of it, and they loved her, and so that was easy for them and for her to be able to kind of you know, continue that success.
And you mentioned teaching. I think one of the things that people don't appreciate is that assistant coaches, especially at the Division III level, it's part-time. There are some places it's the head coaches are part-time Division III, Division II. How was the juggling act of teaching, practice, coaching? You mentioned going for certification. Do you look back on that now and go, how did I do all that?
Yes and no, because then as the assistant coach, what's nice is, you know, you can help out in all the capacities that you can. And it's really more on like the time crunch of, all right, I got to get from school to practice to a game and on the road. And then, you know, more on the late night bus to turn around and be back in school at 7 a.m. or whatnot. But at this level, you also have the luxury of kind of, all right, I'm going to come in, give my input, and then I'm going to leave and I might think about it. But you're not taking it home the same way as the head coach. So I think as the assistant coach, when you have those other things going on, it's actually a really nice outlet to just stay and be involved and give you something else to kind of put your energies at and give you an opportunity to kind of step away from your lesson plans or whatever else and shift gears for a couple hours to then go back to what you need to do to execute your full-time job.
How much did teaching help prepare you for coaching, and did it help you in ways that you didn't even realize it was going to help you?
Yeah, I think a lot with preparation. You know, as a teacher, you have to map out your lesson plans. You have to think about, you know, making sure you're laying your foundation on this to then build onto that. And all of that comes into the coaching mode. And so when I'm coaching, that's what, you know, you would see my practice plan is usually laid out kind of like a lesson plan. You know, we have our goals, our objectives, what we're looking for to do that day. And then it's broken down as to, you know, what we're doing first and how it's building onto that. So I think that mindset definitely has helped me in preparing as a coach.
And it was elementary school?
I was sixth grade, yep.
Okay, so sixth grade, older kids. When do you start thinking, I might like to have my own program, regardless of whether Cabrini, but when do you start like, I like this, I'm good at it, I think I might be ready.
I think it goes back again in the way that the coaching has worked out for me. Again, almost felt like it chose me. So when I stayed on with Bernadette as the assistant, part of it was, again, that I was finishing up my master's. And I actually at that time thought I wanted to go more of the high school route, like stay as the teacher and coach kind of on the side. So, I was more setting my path that way. I really enjoyed teaching. I liked kind of using both sides of my brain that way. I was an English teacher there. And then the whole coaching change occurred again with, Mike getting the job at Penn and Byrne deciding to go. And so for that, I felt like this happened for a reason. There was a reason for me now. I wasn't ready to step into the head coaching job at the time when Bobby left. So when it came that extra year, I felt like almost obliged to go for it in that way.
Do you feel comfortable right away? And how difficult is it, different dynamic as an assistant with players than it is with the head coach? But you mentioned eight seniors that year Bernadette was there. Is it the perfect time to maybe switch because there's a lot of roster turnover?
It was the first year was tough. So, anytime you have a program that has their third coach in 3 years, no matter whether it's somebody that's familiar or not, the players are going to feel that because every coach is going to try and have their own imprint on a program. And I think as an assistant in my head, I was thinking, okay, well, I'm actually the best option for them because I'm the one that was already a part of this and now I'll just move over. But that old adage where, 6 foot between the bench and what do you have to make? The first year was tough with that because we lost eight seniors and because of the timing of when, the coaching change happened, the recruiting stuff kind of at Division III is very fluid and there isn't, more and more nowadays, there's a little bit more of early people committing. But at that time, a lot of people were waiting until March and April, and that's around the time when the coaching changed. And I wasn't hired fully until July 1 was my first day. So we only had one player come in that year after losing eight players, and I think five or six of them were in that rotation. So the first year was definitely a part of kind of a rebuild into that mode. And it was a little tough to go from that success that I had as a player and then as a coach in those last 2 years, too. I think we were around like 15 and 10 my first year. So it was definitely a learning experience and humbles you a little bit to know, okay, now I got to figure out how to be more of the head coach.
That being said, though, like 15 and 10, there are a lot of coaches that would strive to get to that level. Do you feel right away, I'm pretty good at this, even with the challenges with the roster and all, like this makes sense?
I knew I wanted to get better at it. So I think when I look back at my first year, there were certain things that I'm like, okay, I know how to do X, Y, and Z. But then, as coaches, we are always looking for ways to get better. And so, no, I definitely was not thinking, oh, I got this. I think luckily, too, I had, a great group of coaches at Cabrini who have had a lot of success. So there's a lot of people that I'm walking into to doors. You got a minute and trying to pick their brains on the best ways. And, Bobby's still on my speed dial. So I know she got a number of phone calls that year, as she still does.
One of the things that's amazing, and I've mentioned this before to other people, the executive producer of the podcast, Tom Rickert, we got about 12 episodes in and he goes, why does everyone have a connection to Cabrini? And it's true. I mean, they're in all different sports. It is absolutely amazing how many people coached there, played there, were an assistant. The ties are incredible. Do you kind of feel that and realize that Cabrini has been like this touchstone for so many places? And why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to these podcasts and I've noticed the same thing. And I think it just kind of goes back to, John Zeke was such a great administrator and basketball coach there. And I think like he's somebody I think of when I was growing up and knowing around the lines. And Cabrini just does a great job of pulling in people who care. And I think, we have a good balance of coaches who see it as kind of an opportunity to learn and as a stepping stone to grow and move on to other opportunities. And then others who kind of we fall in love with what's there. And it is really the people who make it such a great place to be. And you can see the success across the board. Anytime you feel like you're having success, you can look down the hallway. And, you know, right now, every time we walk in the office, we see the national championship from the men's lacrosse program. So you see that, and I think success drives success. So that pushes everybody else to want to do more, and that's where a lot of us kind of stay locked in.
How many years as head coach until you really start to feel like you're starting to run downhill and you know what you want, you know the type of player you need, and it really starts to cook, in your opinion?
I think year four was like the first year we won the conference championship and went to the NCAA tournament. And I think it was around then, that's where that was my first recruiting class were juniors. And then you're actually looking and seeing how you're building on around then. So I think that was when I started to feel more comfortable with, okay, this is now my program that I'm putting, you know, kind of my imprint on. But, you know, you never feel completely comfortable, because as soon as you get content, that's what we talk to our athletes about all the time. That's when somebody else comes and creeps up. So we're constantly looking for ways to continue to get better and treat each year as a new year.
What's it like to take a team to the NCAA tournament? You've done it multiple times. Well, obviously it's special, but what is the feeling? What is the biggest emotion you feel when you think about the idea of taking a team to the tournament?
I think it's just that sense of, you know, accomplishment that they put all that hard work and energy in, and basketball especially is such a long season. So when you see a team that's able to, you know, put their own individual needs aside in order to sacrifice for the best of the team and to get to that point that they're all striving for, every team goes in the beginning of the year saying, we want to win a conference championship. We want to go to the NCAA tournament. So when you have teams that, you know, it really put in the work and effort to get there, and to see how excited they are for each other, that's the part as a coach that is really rewarding.
How tough, when you went from playing to coaching, was the loss of control to deal with? As a player, you're out there. Even if you make a mistake, I'll get them next time. As a coach, you know, you can only go so far, and they have to execute what you want them to execute. How hard was that to deal with, that loss of control, for a lack of a better term?
Yeah, it's still a daily challenge. I think every game, you know, I look at and think about, and we talk about it at timeouts and at huddles, like, all right, these are the things that we can help you with, and these are the things that we can't. Like, we can't go out as coaches and make the layups and the free throws and those kind of things. So really tried to do is put as much effort into game preparation going into the game so that they know, okay, this is our game plan for the game. And then if that game plan isn't working, then as coaches, we have to take control on executing what adjustments we have to make. But other than that, we kind of try to tell the team as best we can to go next play, because basketball especially, it's just, you're going to make mistakes. And it's more on, it's not the mistake that's important. It's how we react to the mistake and what, you know, that hustle play to get back if you miss a shot. You know, if you're diving on the floor, you're doing the little things. We try to really harp on that to put ourselves in the best position to win.
Think 5 NCAA tournament appearances, and in 2014 you win the first round game, and it's the first time Cabrini's gotten out of the first round. I think you beat Moravian. What's the joy like doing that, and knowing that you've done that can never be erased? That's going to be the first time Cabrini's won an NCAA tournament game.
Again, that those seniors, I think, were my first recruiting class. So that was special, just because I think you have a certain bond as the head coach with that first class that, you know, those are the ones that you kind of establish those relationships with. So I was just ecstatic for them to have that, you know, kind of mark on history in the books. And really, I think for us, we were each year competing in there, and we wanted to take that next step. And you know, I don't really look at it as that's, you know, nobody can erase that part of it. It's more on the fact of, you know, just then the teams after that can build off that. And that's, you know, every alum, we talk to them about the importance of kind of setting the tone. And then the current players are playing for the people before them and trying to build that family and that connection between the people of the 2014 team and now the people of the 2020 team.
What is the difference? You're one of the few people that has been to an NCAA tournament as a player and as a coach. How is the feeling of accomplishment different? Is it different?
I think, like you said, you know, as a player, you only get so many chances because, you know, your playing time is done. So, you know, you kind of look around and you just try to embrace that feeling. And then as a coach, you know, you've been there as a player and now you want your players to be able to kind of have that same experience. So it's more, like I said, every year we try to talk about playing our team, our whole season is for the seniors because we know that's kind of their last run at it. So we want to give them as many long-lasting experiences as possible. So that's one of the reasons why I think that NCAA, you know, is a goal because you want to make sure that their season goes on as long as possible and that NCAA tournament is kind of that last run. So I think it's just special either way because it's another opportunity to play and another opportunity to be together.
Is one more satisfying than another?
No, because it's kind of just, you know, I look at it as two different. I have my playing career and now I have my coaching career, and I just kind of look at them as, you know, equally exciting opportunities, and you know, you just have a different appreciation from the sidelines, though.
If you were recruiting my daughter, what would you tell me as a parent? How do you tell kids that kids and parents that Cabrini is where they should be?
Through the recruiting process, you know, we talk a lot about finding the best fit, the best overall fit. So as a Division III program, we, you know, my first question is always about their academics and what they're looking to study and making sure that's something that Cabrini can offer them. Because post-college, you know, your degree is going to be more important than your playing career. And then from there, we just talk about, you know, if you want to have an opportunity to come to a program that has had success, that values the balance of the academics, the athletics, and the social, and that really cares about each other and the team. And, you know, we try to kind of build a family that way. And the family at Cabrini stretches across the whole, I think, athletic department that way, too, and kind of going for each other. So being able to have kind of that small, tight-knit community gives a different experience.
How much, I don't know, better is the word I want to say, but over the course of your career, when it comes to recruiting, just how much more of a better feel do you have for? Because I would figure by this point, you know the type of kids you need to fill certain roles, and you know kind of where to find them, no?
Yes and no. Recruiting, I say, like every year seems to kind of differ. Just because, you know, we try to kind of go to certain fits. So, you know, small Catholic college. So when you're looking at small Catholic schools, you know, St. Hubert's, we've had success with girls from that area. But then we also sometimes want to go outside the area. Like I was a player who wanted to go a little bit away from home. So the Philly basketball area is such a good, there's so many good teams and players to pick from. So it's nice to have that in our backyard. But I'll be honest that each year it kind of seems a little bit different recipe. And some of the best kids that I've had come through the program, I've maybe completely underestimated, and they kind of like decided to come and we're like, oh, okay, great, we'll see how they go. And then they're some of the best players that we've had. So you really don't know until they get to there. And that again goes back to making sure that they feel that Cabrini's the best fit. Because if they feel it's the best fit, then they're going to put their whole self into it.
How would Kate the player fare under Kate the coach?
I think we'd be okay. I think some of the stuff that hopefully my team doesn't listen to this, because some of the stuff that we promote, I will be honest, I don't think I did. Like we have what we call a gold star chart, and a gold star is if you take a charge. I'm not sure that I took a charge during, you know, maybe accidentally. I would get on the floor for loose balls. That's another one that we value competitor-wise that way. But I think, you know, I was a fierce competitor on the court. I didn't want to come off the court. And so that's one of the things that we talk to our team about, though. When you do come off the court, you got to make sure you're slapping everybody's hands and pushing through that. So there's a lot of things that I think back on my experience as a player and think about, was I the best teammate that I could be? And in certain ways, I think it was. In certain ways, I think I needed improvement. So the areas especially where I needed improvement are the things that I harp on as a coach.
What's your favorite part of what you do?
I know most coaches say this, but it definitely has to be the relationship piece. Just because, you know, when you think about the whole process and what we do, and the way that we're able to see players that we recruit as high school juniors, seniors, and come in and see their growth and development from the time that we meet them then to the time that they graduate from campus and then continue on into life afterwards. It is something that, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs in basketball, and there's a lot of days in coaching where, you know, you're pulling your hair out. But it's that thank you email from an alum or from a current player that's asking you thank you for what you're doing, and that relationship with each one of them that you establish that makes it all worth it.
On the other end, what's the biggest challenge of what you do?
I think it's just kind of that balance. I think especially balancing the highs and the lows, because, you know, it can go as easy, this huge win team all together. The next day you can't buy a basket and, you know, you go down. And then balancing the work-life balance part of it is important, because during the season, you know, you're all in, you're watching film left and right, thinking about things and, you know, trying to make sure that I take the time to see my kids. So coaches, as a lot of time you hear them say, someone will say to me, how are your kids? And I'm like, which ones? You know, the 18 that I'm coaching every single day or the two that I'm raising at home. And, you know, I think try to give each of them as much attention as we can.
How far, in your opinion, have women's sports come as far as quality, coverage, and fan reaction?
I think, you know, when I talk with some of the coaches who have come before me and have laid the groundwork, coaches like Jackie Neary and Bobby Morgan, their experience as players and even their early years of coaching are drastically different than what I had as a player and a coach. So I know that it has come leaps and bounds. But I think, as you know, female athletes, we're constantly still looking for ways for it to improve, and ways for everybody to kind of embrace, you know, women and college athletics along that way, because there is a lot of talent there. So I think, you know, we're always going to look for more.
Kate Pearson, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And that will do it for this week's episode. One-on-One is an original sports podcast from KYW News Radio. If you like the show and want to help us out, make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. You can help more people find out about the podcast by finding the show on Apple Podcasts and leaving a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at One-on-One Pod, and you can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Want to thank Kate Pearson, head women's basketball coach at Cabrini University, for stopping by this week. My name is Matt Leon. Come back next week for another good conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Airo. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Airo uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Airo. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit DetectTheSOS.com to learn more.